everyone, and welcome to the Well and Wild podcast. Before we start, I just wanted to say a really big thank you to everyone who listened to my first show last week. I received some amazing comments and messages of support, and it was just so lovely to hear that the content resonated with you. And for some of you, even inspired you to take your first yoga class, which is really, really cool. And it was just great to hear. So thank you so much for your support. It means such a lot to me. Before we start as well, I just wanted to ask if you could possibly please share this episode with one friend. So when you get to the end of the episode, if it resonated with you and maybe you've got one of those friends who's always banging on about leaving their day job and going and doing something different, but they never kind of seem to take the action, hopefully this episode would kind of help show them how that's possible and inspire them a little bit to start thinking about it a bit more and maybe take action. And I would just love to impact some more people. So if you could send the episode on to one friend, I would be very, very grateful. Today's episode is a really amazing discussion. So my friend Emily switched the corporate life for her own business, and she's now a wedding planner. She specializes in weddings in both Italy and the UK, and the conversation is so fascinating. It was great to hear what she's up to, and it was also really interesting to hear her perspectives on what it took to kind of leave that corporate life behind and start her own business, and some of the challenges with that. And she also goes into some advice for people who might be thinking the same thing. So it's a really, really fascinating discussion, and I hope that you enjoy. And thank you so much for listening. So Emily and I became friends when we were about 20 years old, I think, on an internship working for a bank called JP Morgan down in Bournemouth. And Emily is so down to earth and one of the most genuine people I've ever met. And I remember starting JP Morgan thinking there was going to be so many like intimidating and cutthroat people, but luckily it wasn't like that. And there was a really lovely group of girls and we all just hit it off. So in terms of career, Emily started on the graduate scheme at JP Morgan, but then quickly kind of realized that it wasn't for her. And she left the bank to set up her own wedding planning business. And she's organized some incredible weddings in both the UK and Italy. And I just had a quick look through your website, Emily, and the photos on the locations just look so beautiful. So I'm really excited to chat a bit more about it.
Thank you. That's a lovely introduction.
That's all right. So welcome. It's good to have you on. So how are you? It's been a while since we've both chatted, so it's a really good excuse to catch up.
It is. I am good, thank you. Just in my wedding season is literally just kicking off. May is the start of things for me. Well, technically April, but May is my busy month. And yeah, it's nice to catch up. And like you say, we've kind of started a few years ago and then both done completely different career paths now, so I'm equally as excited to be involved in your new venture.
Thank you. So I was thinking about where to start, but I think it would probably be a good place to start with your interest in weddings. So as I understand, or as I remember, you worked in a bridal shop before JP Morgan, right? So that's kind of your first kind of introduction to the wedding industry.
It was. So it was only ever really, not a part-time job, but sort of a short-term job, I guess is the word, between me being in like university holidays, and I think it was finishing uni and going travelling. It was in between that kind of period. And I knew bridal shop owner at the time. I still know her now, but I just kind of said I was looking for something short-term because of all my plans to go away and whatnot. So she very kindly gave me a job there. And then that was when I got my first experience of working with brides, obviously the wedding industry, and all the lovely sides of working in a bridal boutique that everyone kind of expects, really. It's obviously a nice job to have, especially if like me, you like all things weddings and girly and wedding dresses and stuff. So I never had that in my head as being a long-term career or anything. Like at that point, I already had the grad scheme at the bank lined up as well. So I was going to work there for a bit, go away traveling, and then start at the bank, which kind of is what happened. But then I pretty soon realized that I kind of missed the wedding industry and liked working with the brides and hearing all of their stories and things. So in the back of my mind was always kind of weddings, but even at the start I wasn't thinking I'm going to do wedding planning or anything like that. At that point I then kind of switched over to being focused on the grad scheme, really.
Yeah. And I think it would be good to then, I guess, leads me on to the next part, which is when you're at JP Morgan, what kind of started to happen that made you think that it wasn't really for you? And I kind of like can resonate with this as well. Because
you're always the one that was like super driven and like seemed to love it and everything. But I guess first I should say it's nothing towards the company in any way specifically. It's more just the industry and the corporate life. Like, I never ever knew what I wanted to do. I was always one of those people where I wanted a job that paid me good money and I didn't know what that was. I was at Southampton University and through various career fairs came across JP, obviously then got onto the grad, the internship, which is where we met, as you say. This is kind of cramming a long period into, into a nutshell, but did the internship, kind of got the introduction to the bank and how many different jobs there were within the one company. Still didn't think, oh, this is absolutely what I want to do, but I didn't know what else I wanted to do. So when I was then offered the graduate scheme off the back of the internship, it seemed ridiculous to turn it down. You know, it was a good job for a very well-regarded company that was going to pay well. So I kind of, in a way, I guess, fell into the grad scheme, never had like a banking passion or anything like that. And the graduate scheme, as you know, was set on like three different rotations. Well, mine one was anyway. Yours was slightly different, wasn't it? But yeah, so I knew that I would get the opportunity to try three completely different roles within the company. And to me, I was kind of thinking, this is such a big business. I must be able to find something here that I love doing. And as time went on, I just kind of realized that wasn't me. And I was surrounded by very driven people who, you know, loved it and they had the passion for it, and I just didn't have that. And as it kind of progressed, I was just finding myself not enthusiastic about the core product of what we were selling, what we were doing, and just not enjoying corporate life. It just didn't really seem for me. And I've never considered myself to be overly creative either, so it's not like I kind of thought this is the complete opposite to what I've always thought I'd be doing. It just felt like they were almost too big a company to work for me. And I kind of found myself wishing away my Monday to Friday. I'm not from Bournemouth originally. I'm from Sussex, so kind of nearer to Brighton. So I had moved to Bournemouth specifically for the job. All of my friends from home were still back at home. And I was kind of thinking, I'm living in a town that I don't want to live in. Again, nothing bad against Bournemouth, just wasn't like, you know, my home. So I was kind of thinking, I'm living somewhere I don't want to live for a job I don't want to do. I'm waking up on a Monday, I'm wanting it to be Friday. And I just didn't want to spend my life doing that, really. I thought, I want to go to work and enjoy it as much as you can. And I know not everyone's lucky and loves their job, but I just started to think, if I feel like this now, I don't want to get in a position where I'm stuck in the job doing it, and 20 years down the line I'm looking thinking, now it's too late for me to do something else. So I kind of started to think, what else do I want to do? And then I had a relationship go a bit wrong when I was down there as well, and I guess that was the final call for me. I was like, I'm living in a place I don't want to live in, doing a job I don't want to do, and my relationship's just gone tits up, so what am I going to do about it? And it kind of started from there, really.
Yeah, but I think it's really interesting because it's such a weird situation, because I kind of found myself in a similar situation. But like, it's hard because JP Morgan's like the number one investment bank in the world, and people often like, oh my god, it's amazing that you got a job there, and it kind of makes you think, oh god, this is like quite a like decent thing to be doing and decent setup, and it makes you like really have this conflict with yourself.
And I knew I could have a good career there. I was doing well there at what I was doing, you know, there was clear career progression that I could have followed with, and with that career progression comes salary increases, you're getting a good pension, all the security that you don't get with self-employment I had. But for me, and I'd always before that been someone that thought, if I get paid enough I can do anything. And then now I just believe like you have to have some enjoyment out of what you're doing. Like, if you can get that, the work-life balance, and, you know, enjoy your Monday to Friday, then it's worth more than the money, I think.
Definitely. But I think it's really admirable that you realized that at such a young age as well, because
or naive. You know,
but I think, like, you know, it took me a while to like get over that, I think. And I think now I'm just like, I'm really passionate about trying to dispel this idea that by leaving the corporate world, you're like sacrificing something, because people seem to be stuck in this job that they don't personally like nothing, like we said, there's nothing against the company at all. Like, I actually think it is, if you like banking, it's probably one of the best ones to work for, like amazing culture for a corporate company. But there are people who are stuck in these roles that they don't really want to be doing, and they see corporate versus like non-corporate, and it's, they see stepping out of it as sacrificing things, but actually that's wrong. And you can make money in non-corporate jobs in any industry if you're like driven and smart. I mean, like, if you look at these personal trainers, for example, like that are like on Instagram 25 years old making like six figures, you know, there are these options. And it's just like bullshit that if people think that they can't make any money from jobs outside of like the typical grad schemes,
exactly. You just kind of in a way have to work harder to make it happen, because no one's going to just hand you the money every month, I think. But then that comes naturally with having the love for what you do. Like, I love my job. I work harder now than I have ever worked previously for anyone else, because if I don't do it, no one else is going to, and if I don't do it, you know, I'm not getting paid. So I think you can definitely get the money. You just obviously have to have the drive and want to do it, which I think is what every self-employed person has to a degree.
Mm-hmm. So I also remember you telling me once, you're going to be like, what? That your manager pulled you into a room to basically say, like, what do you want from your job? Because you were showing all the signs of being this amazing top performer, but you'd leave at 5 o'clock. And they didn't really understand. They didn't really get it, like, what was going on. And I'm guessing that was kind of when you were rushing home to like work on your side business.
Exactly. I think that's one of the things, you have to be prepared to have two jobs for a while. And I had various managers, obviously, because I had three different things. And then my final manager knew all about what I was doing, and I have to say couldn't have been more supportive about it, which made a massive difference. I think when I was starting out with it, I was a bit more secretive about it, I guess, because it's not going to go down well when you're working for a company to say, I have no long-term plans here, because it became apparent to me quite quickly that it wasn't going to be long, like where I wanted to spend my life. But my graduate scheme was 3 years. So to me, I was always going to complete those 3 years, so that I had that behind me as a backup, if you like. And also, you can't just start a business overnight. You need that time to build it, obviously. So I thought, right, I've got 3 years here. Probably about a year into it, I'd say this started. So I had 2 years left. Use it to my advantage. So build the business while I'm here. But like you say, it would get to 5 o'clock and I'd think, right, I'm ready to leave now. Because, you know, my job was 9 till 5. And that is one of the things I would say is very hard with corporate life. And this isn't specific to the company again. It's, I think, across anyone who works a 9 till 5 job, there can be a certain pressure or feeling like if you leave at 5 you're in the wrong and you should be staying there till 5:30, 6:00, 7:00. And I knew loads of grads who were there. My job was more project management, so I could do that having still done a good day's work. There were some people's jobs who demanded them to stay there longer, and obviously most people who are trying to get into banking especially, it's very competitive. And I guess from this particular manager, there was the feeling of, you should be more driven, you should be wanting to stay until 7 o'clock. You know, why are you not reading books to develop yourself? Why are you not doing this, that, or the other? And we had quite a brutal conversation, and I actually just stood in the corridor and cried at that point and said, well, you know, I am developing myself. You think that I'm not, but I am, but just not in this field. I'm going home and I'm working on my business. And like I say, doing two jobs for a while, because I'm doing my day job, and I'm the kind of person, I don't like to not do things properly or like to the best of my ability. So I'm working hard at my job within my job hours, and then I'm going home and working and sitting there till like 11 o'clock at night, you know, doing whatever I need to do for that. So I think it can be difficult to try and balance the two, especially if you are trying to keep one not a secret, but I guess to a degree a secret. And I don't know if that's something that you found as well, but once I then spoke to my next manager about it, because obviously it was getting more serious and I was coming towards the end of my grad scheme, and they start to talk to you about your future plans, and, you know, the development and the promotions that come post the grad scheme. And they were difficult conversations to have because the company is investing in me, you know, they're training me, they have done for the last 3 years, they want to keep you. But I was quite honest with her and said, you know, this is what I'm doing. And I had very good support from her, and she was like, you know, go for it while you can. And that made a massive difference and just took a massive pressure off my shoulders, because then I didn't feel like I was hiding anything. It was all then out in the open. I could do my job well in the day, but I could also, you know, really kind of push my business, which is what I was wanting to do at the time.
Yeah, I think that's that sounds amazing of that manager, to be fair, like, to give you such support on that. But I suppose, do you have, like, from those two different, like, situations and different experiences with the two managers, do you have any advice for someone out there who wants to kind of start working on something on the side, but they're scared that their company might find out, or maybe like question their intentions, like you say? Like, one of the things I found the hardest to do in my last company, when I kind of knew that I wasn't going to be there long term, was like my personal development plans. Like, where do you want to be in like a year or 2 years?
Like, yeah, just, you feel like you're lying. You're being a bit, yeah, you know, underhand about it all. But
yeah,
say, like, have the honest conversation. It's not an easy conversation to have, and obviously every manager is going to react differently, but my attitude was, whilst I'm here, I will still work hard for you. And I don't, like, to this day, I don't think I let my job at the bank slip whilst I was there. You know, I still wanted to perform well, and I think all the time you're delivering on what you're being paid to do, it's like, you know, if someone's got a hobby outside of work and their hobby is that they go and play football every night, you know, does the manager need to know all the ins and outs of that? Like, no, not necessarily. It shouldn't impact your day job. And I think that it didn't with me. It didn't impact what I was doing. It just affected my longer term plans. And instead, what we did was we focused on, okay, what can you do here that's beneficial to the bank, but it's also going to be beneficial to you when you leave? So I was kind of in a projects role. So anything project management wise that I learned, any skills there were obviously transferable, because a wedding really is like a big form of a project. So it's okay, how can we develop you, and how can we put in your, you know, your personal development plans and things that are going to fulfill what we need to fill at the bank, but also I can then take us where, and there's no point wasting the time on the things that don't tick both those boxes really. But I would definitely say, if you have that kind of relationship with your manager, let them know what you're doing, even if it's something that you're just exploring at those stages and you don't know if it's going to become a full-blown business. Because I think for me, like, I had to kind of try it and I had to see, and it could have been that I started it and then thought, actually, no, this is ridiculous. What am I doing? But I think especially when you're young, you're kind of still figuring things out as well. You know, you're entitled to explore those options as long as it's not at the.
Yeah, definitely. And I even think now, compared to like 4 or 5 years ago when we were in that, when we had just started, I think it's like become more normal to have a side hustle than even, yeah, years ago. So, and a lot of people like have a great side hustle that they have no intention of leaving their job. So it doesn't necessarily,
yeah, mean. And obviously it depends on your role and whether you need to declare other incomes and things like that. Yeah. Then of course, I'm not saying like hide that from anyone, like declare it. But like you say, it could, you know, you could just be prepared to work like crazy and do two jobs the whole time. So just because you've got something else on the go doesn't mean you're going to stop doing your current job well.
Definitely.
Even at all, really.
And so so when you decided to leave, was that based on kind of, well, I guess these like environmental factors that you mentioned, but then also the end of the grad scheme, or was it like you wanted to build your business to a point and then you'd leave?
A bit of both. It was starting to get hard for me to grow it while still being focused. So I think in the early stages when I was doing research and things like that, I could easily do both without one impacting the other. I actually took my first client and I was still at the bank, and planned my first wedding and basically evenings and weekends, and on my walks into work I'd have a call with the groom every day.
That's amazing. I love that.
I look back now, I don't really know how, but I think I was just so eager to be doing it that I just somehow managed it. And then the grad scheme finished of March 2016, I think it was. And by that point, my first wedding was coming up in June. So I took the client in November, done a few months planning at the bank, and then the wedding was coming up. And it was starting to dawn on me that it was going to get hard, even with the support of my manager and stuff, it was going to get hard to take, like, really kind of launch my business whilst being at a job that did require a certain, like, professional level and things. It worked quite well for me in that shortly after the grad scheme finishing, the bridal boutique that I mentioned had someone leave. So I kind of said at the time, you know, I'm thinking of leaving banking. I wasn't ready yet, you know, to have no salary. It's not like I'd saved up for ages or anything like that, so I didn't have the money behind me to just think I can just stop working. I didn't have that luxury. I thought I'm going to need some kind of income somewhere until my business is at a bigger stage. So she kind of says to me, well, do you want your job back at the bridal shop, which I then knew could be so much more flexible, and I could work, you know, fewer days there. It was in the same industry. The manager knew completely what I was doing. So there was kind of like, it was a more complimentary job to be doing alongside wedding planning. And I just kind of thought it's now or never, really. So pretty much immediately after the grad scheme finished, I left and went back to the bridal boutique a few days whilst then building the planning business. And it worked quite well to do that. It was just timing and kind of a bit of taking the plunge. I think no business is fully ready for someone to do it.
Yeah.
So you're like, there's an element of just doing it and kind of figuring things out afterwards. So that's sort of what I did, really.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I think a lot of people worry about just leaving corporate to start a business, and about, they worry about the money, but in reality it's more just about cash flow. Like, if you really have a dream or a business that you want to create, like, if you really, really want to do that, then really the cash flow that you need is just enough to just live each month and invest in the business, I suppose. But like, it's hard once you've had that salary of banking or whatever to then think, oh, that's my default salary. But in reality, it's not really. It's,
I mean, timing was good for me because at the time I didn't have a partner. So it was, I could be completely selfish about things. And I didn't have a mortgage. I was actually living with friends in time at the living with friends at the time in Bournemouth. So I actually moved back in to my parents for a bit, so I didn't have to worry about paying rent or anything. My business was one that didn't require loads of overheads. I think it's obviously very different, and I wouldn't really know where to start if you're doing something that's a product or, you know, requires loads of stock, because that obviously has a completely different investment thing. Mine was kind of just like you say, I need to be able to live each month, and how am I going to do that? So that's kind of like, yes, I had a bit of money from any weddings that I'd booked already, but that was kind of staying within the business. And then what I was earning at the bridal shop was kind of like my living money, if you like. But like I say, it came at a time when I didn't have a mortgage to worry about, and I didn't have, you know, a partner and things, and I still don't have kids. So like, none of that was a concern to me. I think, you know, I'm not saying that you can't do it when you're older and when you've got responsibilities, but the sooner you kind of can do it, I think the easier it is, because it was just me that I had to worry about. And if it messed up, it was only on me. It didn't fall on everyone else. And I kind of looked at it like, corporate life will always be there. So I made sure I didn't burn any bridges, and I left everything on a good note when I left the bank. So I thought, if I try this and it fails miserably, at least I know I tried it and I can go back to corporate life if needed. So I'd say that's one thing as well, like, try and keep everything on a positive note if when you leave, so that it is there as your fallback.
I think that's really good advice. But, and not even just for that, like, I think it's so important to not burn bridges. Like, these people could, you never know, they could end
you
up,
you never know when people are going to come back up. Like, especially, you know, I get recommendations for friends and stuff getting married, and you know, you just don't know when these people are going to cross your path again. So I think, yeah, the kind of better note you can leave it on, the better it is for everyone.
Yeah, definitely. And something I wanted to ask you, like, about that time, and this is kind of something I'm experiencing now, is that when you left corporate and you started working in the bridal shop, and all your friends are kind of starting on their corporate careers, earning all this money that they weren't earning before. But you've just kind of like left and, you know, your salary goes down. And you can kind of feel a bit like a dropout. And there's kind of this like career snobbery that comes along with it as well. Like if you're not working in a corporate job, sometimes a bit of judgment comes along. Like, did you experience any of that? Or like, even just on, like yourself, like worrying about how it was going to be perceived?
I think yes and no. So I'd say I even had, like, my parents were really supportive. I think they knew that banking was making me miserable. I wasn't enjoying it. And I think they could see that. I had some other family members who I think questioned what I was doing to a degree, because they're very good jobs themselves and knew, you know, I could have a good career there. And I don't think it was like looking down on me in any way, but more like, are you sure? You know, is this really what you want to do? How are you going to make money for it? So I did kind of, but that just kind of pushed me even more to be like, well, I want to prove you wrong. I'm going to do this. It might just take a little while for me to build my salary level back up. And I think for me, I didn't dwell on it too much because I just loved it. I loved that I was out of corporate, like I'd got to a point where I just wasn't happy there, and I think I just loved that I could then manage my days, even though, like I say, I now work harder than I have worked, more hours than I've ever worked before. I can organize my days and how I do it, and you know, I get to travel with my job. And I think just the freedom of kind of being my own boss outweighed any negativity or doubt, and I never questioned whether I was doing the right thing. I think yes, there are downsides. A big one for me has been trying to figure out my pension, which I never even thought about when I was at bank, because it was just automatically done. You know, little things like that. There are certain elements where you think, you know what, it's a lot easier when I was at bank. And also, I'd say when I didn't care as much, I didn't have the love for it, so I didn't really care. As long as I did, you know, a good job that I was happy with, it didn't bother me. Whereas I'm a lot more like emotionally invested in my business, I think, which has its plus points, but also its downsides, in that you kind of care too much and you can't switch off from it as much. So I think, I forgot what your initial question was, but about like, regretting it.
About judgment. Yeah.
Or like judgment. And yeah. So I think for me, all those perks of it were outweighing it. I was just super excited, and I think, you know, when I started I probably was a bit naive, but I think you kind of need that as well to kind of make you just go for it without questioning anything. So any kind of judgment then I was a bit oblivious to, really. I thought, you know, for me it's the right decision. If you want to stay in the bank and you want to do all that, fine, but I could think of nothing worse than, you know, even though you're earning more money than me, I can think of nothing worse than doing my days like that. So I kind of,
yeah, but I think that's amazing to be so honest with yourself. I really do. Like, lots of people aren't that honest with themselves, and I think it took me quite a long time, but I think the point that I reached was that the fear of staying there became,
yeah, I could see people
the fear of leaving. Yeah, you know,
I could see people who weren't happy in their jobs, but they were like, you know, in their 50s and they weren't about to do anything about it, because
yes,
why would they at that point? Mm-hmm. And what I found amazing, I think what gave me the support, and like going back to the judgment thing, when it was open that I was leaving and everyone in the department knew that I was leaving, and people were surprised because a lot of people didn't know, because it had been kept, you know, relatively quiet. But the amount of people that kind of congratulated me and were like, good for you, the people that had been there for years and they were making good money and they had good careers, but they were like, do you know what, I'd do that. If I had my time again, I'd do that. Like, good for you. And it kind of solidified to me that I was doing the right thing. So I guess from within the corporate life, there actually wasn't really that judgment. It was, everyone was like, go for it, do it. And that just,
I had the exact same as well, and it's crazy, yeah, because these people, everybody could if they wanted to, but you know, maybe their desire wasn't as strong as ours necessarily. Yeah. But,
and I do think it is harder when you're at a later stage, and like I was saying before, like when you've got to worry about how am I going to pay my mortgage and all of that, like, you know, I've got kids to feed, whatever, like all of that does influence your decisions, I think. But it's not to say that it's not doable when you're at that later stage as well.
Definitely.
I just didn't want to regret it. I didn't want to be like in my 50s and then look back and think, what if I had have done that?
Yeah, definitely. Okay, so what's it like being a wedding planner? I'd love to know kind of like a day in the life of being a wedding planner, although I know probably many days are different, but it's something that, you know, I haven't got married before, so I have no idea. Like, I've never had the services of wedding planner, but it sounds like a really cool job, so I'd love to know more.
Yeah, I love it. It can obviously have its stresses, like any job. I love being involved in what is such a like personal, emotive, exciting time in someone's life. And most of my couples tend to book me about a year to 2 years in advance. Not always. I've got inquiries today actually for later this year. But you know, generally people book me like a year to 2 years in advance. So over that time I get to know my clients pretty well. Know what's going on in their lives, they know what's going on in my life, so which is always nice. And obviously every wedding is different, which also makes it nice, keeps it busy. But in general, you know, people book me and they want to, the first thing we look at is their venue. And I'm predominantly do weddings in Italy at the moment, and obviously with a few in the UK as well. So if it is for Italy, especially, then people kind of have no idea where to start. Sometimes they know what region, sometimes they have never even been to Italy, they just like the sound of it. So it's kind of, we start off by fine-tuning where they want to get married and what style of venue they like. And then we'd organise a trip for them to go out to Italy. And I have colleagues out there, because obviously being based in England, there's only a certain amount which I can actually do myself. So that was quite an important thing in the beginning, was to establish contacts in Italy that I could work with to do like the on-the-ground things, such as meeting with the couple to show them the venues and stuff, so that the clients feel they've kind of got that end-to-end experience with me, that they're kind of being looked after no matter what the stage is. So they go out, they pick their wedding venue, and once we've got all of that booked, we'd start working through all of their suppliers, usually by order of preference, like caterer is a big one, photographer is quite a big one, musicians. And I always work with my clients in a way that it's very much a two-way thing. It's their wedding. I don't dictate anything to them. I don't say you have to use this photographer, or you have to use this florist. You know, I kind of take on board what it is they want and then make suggestions to them that I think are going to suit their price point, their requirements, you know, their visual style and things like that. But equally, if they say to me, well, we found this person on Instagram, we love the look of their work, we want a bit with them, that's fine. Like, it's kind of like a two-way thing that I'm here to give you the support if needed. So when all of this process is going on, most of my days are actually spent on my computer, on my own, working from home, just in my emails. So I guess that's one of the less enjoyable aspects, is in some ways, is the work from the missing the social side, because I am just on my own most of the time. So that's kind of completing all the planning. And then it comes to the wedding day itself, which I always make sure I am at, or my colleagues at least are at.
That's super stressful for you. Like, how do you feel when you have a wedding the next day?
Well, excited. Normally by that point I have you know, just excitement, like we're ready for it to be there.
Good.
There's always the pre-wedding nerves for anyone, and I actually, it's good timing speaking with you, because I literally just had a wedding in Italy on Saturday and it pissed it down all day.
Oh,
it is gutting. I'm gutted for the couple when that happens.
Yeah.
Because, you know, one of the things, I always make sure that our venue is suitable for a plan B for the guest members, so that in the event of rain, we're not stuck. You know, we can go indoors. It's not necessarily your number one option, but your wedding can still go ahead. And if there's not that plan B, that would be something that I very much point out to the couple at the beginning. But you know, you go to Italy to have your wedding outside and in the sun, and this couple had guests coming over from America and all sorts, and it rained the day before, the day of, and the day after. And that is stressful. When I can see the forecast is like that, it's stressful, because no one, it's the one element I can't control.
Yeah.
I'd particularly wanted her ceremony outside. The venue was beautiful and she really wanted it outside. So we set up inside, then we moved everything back outside, and we just were waiting for the rain to pass. But obviously that's when it comes to thinking on your feet and, you know, going with, we've got all our best laid plans, but then it's like, okay, what do we need to adjust to make sure this bride can still have it? So I guess it's like a bit of adrenaline. I go from being in the office, like just doing my emails, to then the wedding day is fun, chaotic. Chaotic, or like organized chaos, is in like I'm there to kind of organize everything, but there's an element of all the suppliers just pulling together in situations like that, you know, doing what we can do to limit the effects of the rain. And as it was, everything was beautiful. The couple had a great day, and you know, suppliers were coming to me, I don't know how you could not have a planner. And then there's like the post-wedding high where like, we did it.
Yay.
Yeah, and you see photos and you see how happy the couple are and they're thanking you and stuff. And that's when I really think I love my job. Not just because I'm beautiful, but like you feel like you're making a difference to that couple's wedding day as opposed to a big corporate company's profits. And I think that's one of the things that I love, really. So wedding season, wedding supply is a crazy, crazy time, but there's a lot of good moments in wedding season.
Yeah. I think when you were just talking there, like imagining the wedding being finished and seeing all the pictures and how happy everyone was, like that must just feel amazing. And yeah, I think I was thinking about this today when I was thinking about what we were going to talk about. And actually, I think that is one of the challenges about the corporate world, that you are so far separated sometimes to the impact that you're actually having.
Yeah.
But that's amazing. Okay,
it's so guests as well, like the guests would come out to me saying like, you did an amazing job today, like can't have been easy in the rain. And I don't expect any of that, because it's not about me in any way on the wedding day, it's about the couple. But like just seeing people's appreciation, whether it's the couple, whether it's their friends and family, knowing that they've had an amazing day and I've contributed to that,
yeah,
is what makes it all, like, it sounds a very cheesy thing to say, but it is what makes it all
not at all it. Yeah, that's what you want to look for. You want to look for fulfilling work that like means something to you. Okay, so how did you come about to like specializing in Italy? I'm fascinated by that.
I kind of fell into it, in all honesty, because people always say to me, oh, you must speak Italian. It's like, no, I still don't. Like, I knew I wanted to do weddings abroad when I started because I love traveling, like who doesn't? And I kind of thought, if I can factor travel into my work, then amazing. And I, at the time, got myself like a wedding planning business mentor, like to help get my business started. And she did weddings in Italy. And she said to me, I'm going on a fam trip. So in the wedding and sort of tour operator industry, they organize these things called fam trips where you can go and they're normally all expenses paid and you get to stay in like five-star hotels, all your meals and stuff, because they're trying to sell you their venues. They want to show you their venues, you know, they want you to meet with the best suppliers so that the idea is you then go and sell it to your clients. So it sounded like too good to be true. You know, this was when I was still at the bank and they're saying to me, oh, I can get you on a free trip to Italy. Do you want to come? Like, so that you can see whether that's somewhere you want to plan. And I'd kind of at start thought maybe Spain, because I did my Spanish A-level, so I could speak a bit of Spanish, and it kind of seemed like I like Spain, so I thought it seemed like a logical route to go down. Then I got invited on this trip, and it was all around the Amalfi Coast, and it was beautiful.
Oh, it's amazing there. I've been there.
Yeah. Like, the trip itself was probably the worst example of a fam trip I've been on. The ones I've been on since have been a much different standard, but obviously at the time I didn't know, and I met some amazing people on that trip who are still very good contacts and now friends of mine as well. But it was the first time I'd kind of experienced Italy. I hadn't even been there on holiday at that point. And as soon as I was there, I was like, I love it here. I'm going to, this is where I'm going to plan weddings. And it kind of just went from there, really. And again, went into it a little bit naive, I think, and how easy it would be to plan, you know, abroad. At that stage, I wasn't even thinking I would need someone on the ground to do things for me. Soon became apparent that I did, and the main sort of partner planner that I used was someone that I met on that initial trip. It wasn't that I kind of had always had a love of Italy or anything like that. It was that I went, could see it was beautiful. I thought it's near enough to England, it's not too far, people love it, it's romantic, you know, people like the Italians, they like Tuscany, they like the Amalfi Coast, so I could see why people wanted to get married there, and it just seemed like, you know, a good place to start, really.
Makes sense. I think it's so great as well that you recognize that you love traveling and you wanted to factor that into your business, because I think so many people who have business ideas, they start by thinking, right, what could make money? And I think it's so important, like, you, if you're in a job that you hate, like say you're in corporate and you don't like it because you're chained to a desk or you're a number or whatever, creating a business that makes money, that where you're also doing the same thing, sat at a desk. You know, you're not going to be happy doing that just because you're running it. You know, you're not going to be happy. So I think it's so great that you identified that you love traveling and decided to put that into your business. I think that's...
I mean, it's not always as glamorous as it sounds. The minute I say it, like, I've got three more, had one this weekend, and I've got three more weddings in Italy before the end of the month. And when I say I'm going to Italy, people think it's like super glam. Whereas the reality is, most of the time, I'm traveling on my own. I'm traveling the day before the wedding, doing the wedding, getting into bed at 3 o'clock in the morning and flying home the next day. So it's not like I've got loads of time, you know, where I'm seeing tons of Italy. There are various trips where sometimes I do get to see a bit more and venture out and whatnot. So it's not as instantly glam as it sounds, but it is a part of my job, and it is a part of my job that I love. You know, I find myself staying in venues sometimes and I'm like, I'm being paid to do this, you know.
Yeah.
Somebody's paying me to be at this venue and stay here tonight, and I can't really complain about that.
And like, what variety as well to have that as part of your business. Okay, so also, I know you're engaged, so congratulations.
Thank you.
Big question, who's going to be organising the wedding?
Well, the fam trip that I was talking about before, I said I met a lot of useful contacts. One of them is, like I say, now a friend, and she is a wedding planner in Spain. She lives not too far from Marbella, and she does amazing weddings out there, and she's like a super, super businesswoman. Like, if there was anyone that I was going to trust planning a day, it's her. And that was an important factor for me, being the control freak that I am, and I think any self-employed person is a slight control freak, you have to be to do the job. But especially given that it's, you know, it's my thing, like planning a wedding, like if I was going to relax on the wedding day, I needed someone to be there. Even if I wanted to do all the planning, I needed someone there on the day to look after it. And because we've chosen to get married in Spain, Diana, who's planning it, was the kind of obvious choice. And it's actually been very easy so far. We've just left everything to her, really. She's kind of said, I've got this person for hair and makeup, this person for this, and I'm like, yeah, that's fine, because I trust her. And I think that's the biggest thing, you have to create that trust with your clients. I mean, it's different because I know her on a personal level as well, but that's what I kind of want to give to my clients, that feeling that they can trust my decisions and my recommendations and things. So
I bet you, like, I guess as if you're like kind of a control freak or a wedding planner yourself, like I was wondering whether you were going to want to be really heavily involved, but then again, it's like, you don't want to feel like your own wedding's work either.
Yeah. I am not. So like if we were getting married in England, I would do a lot more of the planning myself, but because we're getting married in Spain, I don't know all the best people to use there. It's not like I know the process of how to plan a wedding and I know what needs to happen, but so much of it is knowing the right people, knowing the right contacts. Anyone can appear professional, whether they are or not, is another matter. So having someone that could say to me, you know, we've got this person. I mean, our photographer is someone who I work with all the time and she's amazing. And so we're flying her over, but everyone else kind of is really coming from Spain. So having someone local to the area that knows it better than me is a big help and a big relief, which is why she's then kind of doing most of the planning. I mean, we've got our vision and we know what we want. It's just a case of then her kind of putting together the pieces and kind of knowing who the right people are to make it happen, really. So it's all at the moment, touch wood, going very smoothly, but
it's so exciting.
Yeah.
So I guess kind of on this point, I wanted to ask you a little bit about being in a relationship and being a business owner and kind of how you manage that. Because I think like my first insight into starting my business and doing this whole self-employed thing is you almost don't stop because you're enjoying it so much and you're so passionate about it, you know, and that's just so nice that you can just work that long enjoying it. But then at the same time, yeah, if I imagine being with someone in that situation, it's like tough. Like, how do you set boundaries with your work and how have you managed that?
It is hard. I think first and foremost, you have to have a supportive partner. Like, Alex is amazing in that sense. Like, he is super proud of what I've achieved and what I've built. He's completely supportive. He helps me on wedding days sometimes. You know, if I need an extra pair of hands, he runs around all over the place and is like really good at doing it. But you are right in that naturally, I think you work more than doing a 9-to-5. my job involves obviously speaking to clients, especially in the initial stages, when they're kind of booking. They themselves work 9 to 5, so therefore it's going to be evenings or weekends. It's most convenient to get the two of them together for me to speak to them. So I think there's certain time. Well, I try not to, as a general rule of thumb, I try and work the same hours as Alec. So he goes out at 8:30 and, well, 7:30 actually, and he comes back generally at 5:00, and I try and do the bulk of my work within that day to day. There are times when, like, I need to do a client call, or like we're recording this now, it's the evening, it's 6:30, but it's not an issue, it's not all the time, and he knows that there's, I'm going to be more stressed if there are certain things I haven't got done. Like, to me, I hate the feeling of my email inbox building up, and we could be sitting downstairs chilling on the sofa, but if I know certain things are outstanding, I won't relax. So he'll just be like, go and do it, and then come back and you'll be able to switch off, which definitely helps. But you do also have to learn, and this is something that took me time, is you don't have to be at people's beck and call. So I don't have to answer an email 5 minutes after it hits my inbox. Like, you know, I can wait till tomorrow. So unless anything is urgent, because, you know, their wedding's coming up next week, it's unlikely that it needs an immediate response. And it's like teaching yourself that. And similarly, client calls. Generally, I try and schedule my client calls as opposed to them just ringing me every 5 minutes, because, you know, I can be working on 20 weddings at once and I can't have 20 people calling me every evening. So I think you have to try and set yourself those boundaries. And it's hard, especially at the start when you just want to do everything. And like you said, I can work and not even notice the time. If I've got stuff to do, I can just get on and do it, and I never clock watch, which is a massive, massive difference for me compared to corporate life, where I literally watch the clock the whole time. Now I don't even notice. But the biggest thing is being on holiday and making sure you set your out of office, you tell your clients in advance, I'm not going to be there at this time, unless, again, something comes up urgently for your fast approaching wedding, I'm taking time out, because you have to do that. And I think we just went to Costa Rica for 2 weeks, and it was badly timed for me, because I was coming straight back into a month of weddings, so I thought, I'm going to take that time before wedding season. Whereas actually it was like probably the busiest time for my clients to be emailing me and stuff. And I was in two minds before, what am I going to do? Should I take my laptop? And I was just like, no, it's important for us as a couple, going back to your question about managing it with a partner, like, it's important for us to have that time. It was going to be our last holiday until after the wedding, because we need to be saving for that. So it was important that I wasn't working the whole time. So then I think it's just about preparing. So I made sure on multiple occasions that I pointed out to my clients that I wasn't going to be there between here and here, and if they needed me to do anything for them, do it before. And then I felt like, well, I'd warn them, and they appreciate it. They know at the end of the day, you're a human being, you need to take time off, and everyone was good about it. They were like, no, go, have a good time. No, don't worry about it. We've got your number. If we need you, we can talk to you. And I was so pleased in the end that we did do that, and I didn't work. I even said to Alex, I was like, you're proud of me, I haven't sent any emails. Aww. it is hard to do, but you have to learn to kind of say no and give yourself that.
yeah. And how was Costa Rica? Photos looked amazing.
It was amazing. Yeah, it feels like we haven't even been now, but Aww. It was very hot and lots of cool wildlife, like with monkeys 5 minutes down the road.
Yeah. And stuff. Oh, yeah, I really want to go. Okay, so that kind of leads me on, well, we're coming up to time now anyway, but I have a little quick fire round that I've been doing.
Okay.
Like, oh god. No, so it's just three questions, but the first one is, what is the best book that you've ever read?
Oh, I'm a terrible reader. I never really read unless I'm on holiday, and then I just read those books that are like, you know, completely mind-numbing and not anything. I tell you what probably is a very good book, especially for someone who is starting out their business, is Fiona from The Brand Stylist. So she's okay. Got two. One is The Brand Brilliance and How to Style Your Brand, I think. And if she ever listens to this and I've got them wrong, she's going to kill me. But if you search The Brand Stylist, you will find her books. And they're really good for someone who's starting a business, especially if your business is any element of creativity. because it's all about things like colour psychology and choosing your business name and all things that you wouldn't like necessarily think of. She just does things in a very simple but makes sense kind of way.
I need to read that. I find those things so difficult. I'm literally like trying to build a website right now and I'm just like second guessing absolutely every image, every color.
I did mine on Squarespace, my website.
Yeah, that's a good one to use.
But yeah, if you're struggling for like visuals and how to pull a brand together in terms of like how it looks, get on her books because they are good.
Yeah, I definitely need to read that.
You know, some business books can be really hard to read. They're not hard work. They're easy to read.
Nice. Okay, and then this one is, so this podcast is called Well and Wild, with the sense that kind of to be well in life, you need to kind of take some wild risks and do some wild things. So Emily, what's the wildest thing that you've ever done?
Oh my God, I'm going to come out with like a Theresa May answer here, like running for a field, because I literally am not a wild person. I'm
Theresa May answer. Oh my God, you cracked me up.
No, you know, she's like, oh, I ran for a field. No, I hate being out of my comfort zone. So I'm not very good at doing things like that. Like when we were in Costa Rica, and this isn't a wild thing, but it was like a out of comfort zone thing for me.
Okay, we'll go with this.
Yeah, I'm like the worst with heights, and we'd book this zip lining thing. It was like on the side of a volcano and it was just way too hot. It was horrific to me, but you know, did it, pushed myself to do it, cried like my way around, but you know, through the tears we did it. It's kind of thing you'd love, you're like, don't you? But maybe not so much.
Yeah, I would have loved that. So you zipped wired off of a volcano.
It's not off of a volcano, it's like off the, like, I don't know if it's a jungle or rainforest, what the difference is between them. But yeah, it was like through all the trees, and then you'd kind of go out and it kind of looked okay, and then the trees would kind of disappear beneath you, and there was just all this open space, and there were seven of these zip lines that we had to go through. I was just counting them down as soon as I did one. I thought, right, six left, five left, four left.
I think that's pretty wild. I like that. Okay, and then the final one, what's the best piece of advice that you've ever been given? Could be by like anyone.
Best piece of advice, I would say to just say yes and then figure it out afterwards, because that's definitely something that I adopted. Like, you can never know the answer to everything, and like if you're honest about that, people appreciate it. Like, don't blag, because if you bullshit too much, people will see right through it. But I think, you know, say yes and then work out how you're going to do it, because 9 times out of 10 you can then work it out, whereas if you say no, you might lose that booking or that opportunity. So that would be the best.
I think that's really good, and I think it's such a good way to keep yourself accountable as well, because if you're like, say yes, then you've committed to someone else, and sometimes it's easier to commit to someone else than you have deadlines.
Yeah, and if you think too much about it to start with, you'll talk yourself out of it. Like, my biggest thing that I always remember is one of my first wedding, well, the first wedding when I was still at the bank that I mentioned earlier, it was a Hindu wedding in Italy. And it was, can we find a Hindu priest in Italy? And I was like, yeah, of course we can. Then sat there thinking, where am I going to find a Hindu priest in the most Catholic country there is? Didn't know where to start, but I figured out, and I got them, and you know, I had the booking, and it was all fine on the day. But if I'd have thought too much about that, I'd have freaked out and taught myself out, or if I can't, and thought I can't do this. Whereas, like you said, I committed to them that yes, I could, so then I had to.
Yeah, you made it happen. I love that. Okay, well, that's it, Emily. I could talk to you all day, honestly.
Sorry, I feel like I probably waffled a lot. I do that.
No, it's amazing. No, you need to get back to your dog. I can hear him, like, barking.
Oh, I know. Sorry. So cute. Awesome.
But where can the listeners find you?
Well, mainly on Instagram is probably the one I keep up to date most. So that's just Weddings by Emily Charlotte. And obviously there's all my photos from weddings, Insta stories, which are probably the most exciting when I'm actually at a wedding. And also my website is just weddingsbyemilycharlotte.co.uk.
I'll post those in the show notes as well as links. Wow. But thank you so much for coming on my podcast. It's been
Enjoy your self-employed life.
And I'm so proud of you for everything that you've done. It's great hearing all the updates. So there we have it, episode 2. I hope you enjoyed listening. And if you want to follow up with Emily, or you want to have a look at the services that she provides or find out a bit more about her, then please go and have a look at the show notes, and all of her website and Instagram handle is tagged in there. Again, thank you so much for listening, and the next episode will be out in a week's time. And just a quick reminder that if you enjoyed the episode and you think someone could benefit from listening to it as well, I'd be very, very grateful if you could send it on to one friend. Thank you so much for listening, and we'll be back next week.